Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Friday, May 31st, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. Yesterday, we reported on an unusual request from the U.S. Forest Service. The federal agency states, like Alaska, that participate in the Secure Rural Schools program owe the federal government money. Local governments, including in Sitka and other Southeast communities, use the money to pay for schools and all sorts of rural development projects. The Forest Service says budget cuts are forcing them to ask for payments back. Here's what Sitka School Board President Lon Garrison thinks of that.
Well, I'm infuriated by it. I think it's the most ridiculous thing I've heard. I generally don't like to bash government, but in this case, I think the chief of the Forest Service is way out of line.
Garrison says Sitka schools received about $485,000 under the act earlier this year. If the federal government gets the refund it's asking for, the school district would owe about $36,000. But he added, the fight is far from finished.
Congress is going to have to do something about this, and communities that are affected by this really need to let their Congress members know about it.
In other Southeast communities, there's mostly a mood of anxiety over the request, and that is where APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez picks up the story.
When Steve Giesbrecht first learned that the federal government was asking Petersburg to return $55,000 in Secure Rural Schools funding, he was a little taken aback.
Confused, that's a good word. Surprised, I mean, it's, you know, especially considering that the money we received is for 2012. How can that be done?
Giesbrecht is the borough manager in Petersburg, one of the biggest recipients of Secure Rural Schools money in Alaska. The borough got over $1 million last year, with most of it going to education and the rest going to infrastructure projects. Giesbrecht says that Petersburg got the funds months ago and that they've all been allocated already. He's hoping that they don't have to pay the money back for that reason, and Governor Sean Parnell has already said that Alaska has no plans to return the money that the federal government says that it owes. But Giesbrecht says Petersburg could scrounge up the funds if it needed to, and that he's more worried about what the repayment request means for the program's future.
55 is painful, and we would have to figure out a way to do that. It's the long term, it's the bigger issue.
The Secure Rural Schools program was started as a way to compensate timber communities for prohibitions on logging in national forest lands. With the federal government focused on tightening the budget, Giesbrecht and city officials from places like Juneau and Wrangell are worried that the program is at risk. He says that if the money were to go away, it would be like a house of cards, because Petersburg can only collect so much in property tax from its small population base.
You know, so it becomes not a government issue as much as it does a community issue, in the sense that we have to find out, all right, now how do we make that up? How do we decide what services we can still afford to offer, in both at the school and within the borough?
Communities in Southeast spread across the Tongass National Forest got over $10 million in Secure Rural Schools funding this past year, while the South Central region got nearly $4 million for Chugach National Forest lands. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
A group of Sitka residents who got together informally last year to buy bulk natural foods have organized a co-op and have set their sights on possibly a larger retail operation in the future. The group recently brought in a professional consultant to examine the prospects for scaling up their nonprofit grocery operation. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Stuart Reed is with the Food Co-op Initiative in Denison, Minnesota. He's been helping set up co-ops for a long time.
Well, the first connection was actually my then college girlfriend, who was a vegetarian. And
I think we're beginning to get the picture.
I'm not a vegetarian. I was for a time in my life, but I did start really appreciating clean food and the culture of co-ops more than anything else. It's a social environment that's very different from other businesses.
Co-ops at first did have a culture and may not have been for everybody. Reed says they've come a long way from when he used to go shopping with his vegetarian girlfriend.
It's less political. We find that while a lot of the co-ops in the early 80s and were getting started, it was a very progressive movement. It was often the alternative community that was starting co-ops, and it was partly because of the nature of what they were selling, the natural foods, whole foods, which weren't available at that time. Well, that's not the case anymore. You can go to most supermarkets and find at least some of those products. And co-ops keep evolving and are finding that they're often in supporting the local economy through buying local products from farmers, fishermen, meat and dairy producers, whatever. And the grocery chains can't handle that because they can't deal with small producers effectively. So we hope we can keep that niche pretty well.
Co-ops are member-owned businesses. Sitka already is home to one large co-op, the Fish Processor SPC, which stands for Seafood Producers Cooperative. Food co-ops work on a similar template. Shareholders buy in at a nominal cost and receive one vote. Profits are reinvested in the business or possibly distributed as dividends, but the basic rule is always one member, one vote. Keith Nitrate chairs the board of Sitka's newly incorporated food co-op. Typical co-op member fees are $150 to $300.
Here in Sitka, our board decided to keep that membership fee as low as possible. So right now, it's only $20 a year. We're taking the slow growth approach. So we can include as many members in this community as possible without having a bar too high for them to participate in getting bulk foods or natural foods as cheaply as possible.
Right now, the Sitka Food Co-op has 93 members, up from 20 last year. Their purchase volume has grown proportionally from $3,000 per month to over $12,000 last month. Members do their shopping online through three food distributors. Those distributors bundle all the orders for co-op members and send them to Sitka as freight on the barge. The freight is unbundled at Grace Harbor Church, and members drop by on delivery days to pick up their orders. Nitrate says the long-term vision for Sitka's food co-op is an extension of this model.
Our goal is to eventually have more like a distribution center with a retail store associated with that. It may not be open 7 days a week. It may be open twice a month. But because we're started out as a buying club and our distribution is the most important thing, and so to have a centralized location is what we're going for.
But co-ops can be much, much larger. In some communities, they might resemble a corner market. Other co-ops are huge and indistinguishable from mainstream supermarkets. Stuart Reed says this growth speaks to the adaptability of the co-op.
The grocery industry has become incredibly sophisticated. The margins are very thin. Product offerings are from all over the world, and you can get anything you want in the United States grocery store anymore. It's all run through computers and electronics, the ordering, the scanning at the register. It's very, very sophisticated. And the co-ops that have survived the 80s, and a lot of them didn't, but the ones that have grown with that and learned from that. And now we have some stores that are more beautiful than anything you could find in mainstream, perhaps, and every bit is clean, neat, and professional, and doing millions of dollars of sales. Some of the larger ones are doing $20, $30 million business a year.
The important difference, Reed argues, is a co-op's connection to community. He is not anti-supermarket. In fact, he says there are many large independent grocers who contribute significantly to their communities. He has more concerns over large chains that move profit out of communities. Keith Nitrate calls it food for people, not for profit.
The root of the cooperative is cooperation and community. And so those two words, community cooperative, is where we're at.
Like any of the numerous buying clubs that exist in town, the co-op is viable with very low numbers. But Nitrate says they're already eligible for volume discounts on freight. He says the co-op will be working with the Sitka Local Foods Network to involve more local producers in the effort. They're also exploring ways to partner with local seafood producers. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
The proposed expansion of Kettleson Memorial Library in Sitka took a step forward this week. MRV Architects of Juneau will design the library's addition for about $661,000. The library will get about 60% bigger and include a room for rare books and Sitka archives. The space expansion will help the library host increasing and expanding programming. Right now, special events take place in the main public area of the library, which can interfere with the other patrons' use of the space. The Sitka Assembly unanimously approved the design contract at Tuesday's meeting. Afterwards, during the hearing of the public, Library Director Sarah Bell expressed her thanks.
When we started this whole process with the grant program through the state, some of the librarians who'd gone through this process said, oh, you know, it's 7 to 10 years. And I said, it can't be 7 to 10 years. I won't live that long. So at least this looks like it's shortened the timeline. And I really appreciate your listening and your questions, and I hope you're as excited about it as I am, because I think it will be a real asset to the community.
The total expansion project is estimated to cost upwards of $6 million. The state has already put forward about 85% of the funding, and donors have contributed more than $400,000. The library hopes to raise an additional $200,000 towards the entire project. Its Adult Spelling Bee on Sunday is one of the many fundraising efforts officials hope will help with the cost of the expansion. A weekend power outage is being blamed for the crash of a state computer system. The Department of Administration yesterday said major programs affected by the crash include child support and foster care payments, the Alaska Temporary Assistance Program, and the Senior Benefits Program, Medicaid provider payments, and unemployment insurance benefit payments. No timeline was given for completion of repairs, but department spokesman Andy Mills said in an email that the system was back online yesterday afternoon. He said the next step was to deal with the backlog. Mills said complex computer systems are designed to be continuously operating for years. He said a sudden loss of power can cause them to crash. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency is extending the public comment period on its study of large mining impacts in the Bristol Bay region. The comment period was scheduled to end today. EPA announced Thursday that it would now be June 30th. The agency, in a statement, said it got requests from people either wanting to extend or maintain the length of the comment period. EPA last month released a revised watershed assessment that found construction of a large-scale mine near the headwaters of Bristol Bay could have major impacts even without a mishap. The group behind the mine project has called the EPA report flawed and unnecessary. The report is still expected to undergo peer review before a final report is released. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or you'd like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. You're listening to KCAW in Sitka.